Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. How you doing out there? I'm Eric Olson, and this is BC Radio Live here on a very rainy early, Wednesday evening in Cleveland, Ohio. Boy, we've had some great weather here. We had a super holiday weekend. It was most toasty and warm and dry, but the rain's finally catching up with us. That's probably okay. It's midweek. Things are dried out and all that. Boy, great show tonight. I am really excited. We haven't had a traditional kind of hard rocking 80s pop metal influenced band on the show in a long, long time. Very excited about Burn Halo. They are rocking and riffing. We'll be speaking with the leader of the band, the lead singer, the songwriter, James Hart, any moment. Coming up at 6:30, we will be speaking with Josh Hathaway. Also excited about that. Haven't talked to Josh on the radio for a while. He does many, many things for us at Blog Critics, including being one of our music editors. And, of course, Lisa McKay and Philip Wynn will join us for that. While we're waiting for James of Burn Halo to call in, which should be any moment now, scheduled to be on as we speak, let's talk about the band a little bit. They have a new album out. It actually came out a few months ago. It was out in March, I guess. Yeah, and Warner picked it up. It was recorded originally for Island, Def Jam, and James had just left a band he'd been with for many, many years. He's from Orange County. He was in 18 Visions. That band broke up in 07. I guess he was in that band for about 10 years. And he did not pass go, went immediately into working on the new project, which came to be Burn Halo. And he hooked up with songwriter-producer Zach Malloy, who was from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So they were whipping back and forth between L.A. and Tulsa and worked on this material. Recorded it with a bunch of pretty, hard-rocking heavyweights. Nickelback drummer Daniel Adair, former Jane's Addiction bassist Chris Chaney, guitarist Neil Tiemann, I'm not sure which, who now tours with American Idol winner David Cook, and Malloy ran things in the studio. So that all came together, worked on that through 08 for whatever reasons that are not clear to me, certainly, because, man, I'm really digging the CD. It's a little out of my sweet spot in terms of what I listen to on a regular basis these days, although, man, I've been rocking hard all the way back to the, I hate to say it, back to, and I was a guitarist myself and playing the riff rock. That was probably what I was best at. So it was cool stuff. So I'm getting a call here. Let's check it out here. Let's see what this means. Hang on one second, please. Yes, well, hoping that was James calling the wrong number, but no. It was my sweet daughter, Lily. So, oh well. Sad that I could not speak with her. All right, so I'm here by myself, which makes it a lot harder to do the follow-up stuff like saying, hey, when's the dude going to call in? But let's see, I'm going to send an email while we speak and see if we can hook up with James. All right, I've done that. This is drama in real life, my friends. So anyway, I'm excited about the band, and let's see, what else is going on with them? They're on tour. They got a big tour coming up here. We can check out some of those dates. They will be at the Zoo Amphitheater in Oklahoma City, and that is coming up on the 29th, which is Friday. They'll be at Rockfest in Kansas City on the 30th. Then they start a tour with Hailstorm and Beer Union, and they'll be all over the Midwest, then into the East, and that begins June 10th. They'll be in Dayton, Flint, Detroit, Youngstown, Buffalo, Clifton Park, off to Northampton, Massachusetts, Hartford, on and on. And you can gain all kinds of information about the band, their tour schedule. You can hear, check out tunes. There's four tunes up on the site, so that's cool. At the band's MySpace page is www.myspace.com/burnhalo, B-U-R-N-H-A-L-O. So, I guess that's what's going on at the moment. I'm not going to say it's awkward waiting for people, but, you know, sometimes it is awkward waiting for people. But, you know, that's rock and roll, man. So, you know, here we go. Let's see. Have I heard back from my good friend Amanda? My good friend Amanda, who set up the interview, and no, not yet. All right, well, while we're waiting, why don't we check out a tune? I think that would be the wise thing to do and be a cool, groovy way of killing a little bit of time. Here is the opening single, the first single from the Burnhalo album, and it's a pretty good indication of how hard and how riff-rocking the whole album is. Let's check out Dirty Little Girl by Burnhalo. Oh, yes. My gonads are hurting. That was rocking most hard. Hey, the reviews that have been coming in on the album are really great, and they're actually pretty much right on. I'm spots myself that I am seeing many others have written. The band, the sound is really focused on that hard riffing 80s rock sound of LA based, where you had Motley Crue and Poison and Rat and LA Guns and all that. There's some influence on some of the other tunes. There's a couple that have a pretty strong Guns N' Roses type feel, a little more of a roots rock feel to them. And then I even heard Alice in Chains on a song or two. So what it does is it really updates that sound. It's a little bit harder, a little bit punchier, a little bit grungier than those bands from the past, and it's brought right up to the present. So I am duly impressed, my friends. Although it'd be nice if we could have a little chat. Have a little chat with James. Just heard back from my good friend Amanda, and she is on the case, man. These poor publicists, they're always stuck in the middle. They are always the ones in the middle. Everyone's mad at them when something goes wrong, and almost never is it actually their fault. It's a no-win situation. You have to be something of a masochist, I think, because often they're not literally in charge anyway. I mean, they're not literally the handler. You got to go through management and this and that and everything else. So as we know, the band is out on the road, and as I said, their next date is Friday, the 29th. And once again, if you want to check out the band, you can hear a bunch of tunes, at least four songs, and a video that I found. It is a very active and well orchestrated and well and very artful. I like the cover art. We have a Southwest feel with revolvers and the age old cow skull. So hey, that's the Southwestern sort of feel, I guess. And it's not a whole lot of that, but it's not completely absent either. So I guess maybe we'll check out another tune. Good thing we are fortified. I have three tunes from the CD to check out. So let me check the switchboard one more time. No James yet. So, yeah, let's check out the next tune. This one's called Our House, and it's by Burn Halo. It's from their self-titled debut CD, and it is rockin' hard. Our House by Burn Halo. We'll be right back. All right, Our House by Burn Halo. Normally we don't play quite as much of the songs as I'm doing, but hey, we might as well immerse ourselves in the Burn Halo thang while we're waiting to hear from James Hart, lead singer, leader, front man, songwriter, cool groovy guy. Man, you should check out those tattoos. If you're a fan of tattoos, this is a prolifically tattooed individual. And you can check it out by going to the band's site on MySpace. Let's see, do they have another site? Often bands do, but regardless, there's plenty of content here. No lack of it. Go to www.myspace.com/burnhalo. And we just heard Our House, really rocking. I thought of another band, back from the good old 80s, who they remind me of. And again, none of this is like, whoa, slavish imitation. These are just influences that I'm picking up on, or just similarities in sound. I never think anyone's really trying to sound like anyone else, because, you know, everyone sounds like themselves, and that's the way it ought to be. But anyway, good old Rockin' Don Dokken. Dokken was the band. Remember the great George Lynch on guitar? He's still around, of course, one of the great metal/hard rock guitarists out there. And it turned out Don Dokken was my neighbor, believe it or not, in Redondo Beach. I have no idea. Or actually, it was Manhattan Beach. I have no idea if he's still around. He may well be in that area. And somehow we got to be friends. I honestly can't remember where we first met. Maybe I interviewed him for something or other, found out we were neighbors. Anyway, we got to be pretty good pals and hung out some. And I went to some rehearsals of the band, which is really fun. I love the insider stuff. It's always fun to see how people do stuff. And, you know, when people are really talented, even just in a rehearsal setting, they're still pretty great. So I'm sitting there, you know, getting a concert by myself in their rehearsal studio. And it was fun. I had a great time in the 80s doing all kinds of stuff. My media career goes way, way back to, the 70s, I guess. Started in radio at a tender age. But I was in L.A. in the 80s, which is where I'm from originally, and was back there for the 80s. And I was doing some radio, did a lot of writing for various publications, and met a lot of people, did a bunch of stuff, had a lot of fun. I was DJing, too, myself, started a DJ company in the mid-80s. Ended up meeting a lot of people. So it was a fun place to be. It was crazy. Another show, another band I'm thinking of that was similar to that sound, although I'm sure they were not as good. Uh-oh. We may have a call. We may, in fact, have a call. Let's check it out. And I can quit blabbing about my past. Is this James?
No, sir.
No, it is not James?
It is not James. I was getting into the queue here for about 10 minutes from now, Captain EO.
Well, if you've been listening, you hear how I've been I've been stalling because we haven't had James Hart from Burn Halo checking in. And, so I've been saying all I can about the band.
Which is quite a lot, because I've heard you fill time before.
Oh, I've been filling like a mofo. And we do have one more tune. We got one more tune to throw on there, so that'll kill a few minutes. So, yeah, let's check out a third track from Burn Halo's self-titled debut CD. The song is Save Me, in lieu of lead singer James Hart. I think we have a caller. We have another caller. Is this James?
Yes, it is. Finally.
Yes! We have Rockin' James Hart. Man, I've said all I can say in 20 minutes about you guys, considering, you know, we haven't met or anything. But, man, I was comparing you to all my favorite 80s hair metal bands, and I mean that in the nicest way, all the really hot bands, the Motley Crues and the Rats and the Poisons. And, man, I love those bands, and I got to know, actually, quite a few of them, and Dokken. I was neighbors with Rockin' Don Dokken back in the 80s in L.A., so I've been talking about that. But, man, I love this CD. It really does bring me back. It makes me feel young and youthful again. But it's not just all the riff rock. We've heard three songs. We just heard Save Me, by the way, my friends.
Okay.
And
that's
prior to that, we heard Dirty Little Girl and Our House, portions thereof, anyway. So those are all pretty hard riff rockin' tunes, but there's plenty of variety on there too. I heard some Guns N' Roses. I heard some Alice in Chains even. So you've taken that 80s pop metal, that LA based sound, and really brought it up to date. And I think it's really great. I enjoy it very much.
Oh, thanks a lot. You know, when I was doing the record, I wanted to make a rock album that, you know, had some tasteful classic overtones to it.
Well, it certainly has that. Now, I had heard of, I just went to check and see if I had any CDs, and I could have sworn I did, but I guess I didn't. Tell us a little bit about your previous band, because you were with them for, what, 10 years, right?
Yeah, probably a little longer than that, actually. I just started that band in high school with a couple of guys, and, you know, just started out as a metal band. We wanted to sound like Pantera and, you know, Sepultura. And it kind of it evolved from there, you know, went from doing local shows to, you know, playing out, you know, maybe once a month, you know, maybe across the state line or, you know, a few hours outside of our little area. And, you know, from there, anytime we would have, you know, a week or two, you know, off of, you know, college or work, you know, we'd go out and do, you know, small touring up the West Coast. And, you know, one thing led to another, an indie deal and, you know, national touring. And then, you know, obviously the progression of the band led to, you know, us getting upstream to Epic Records and, you know, making more, you know, commercial marketable, you know, rock albums. And, you know, we were a band for, you know, a very long time, did, you know, national, international touring and, you know, disbanded in early 2007, which led me to, you know, kind of go on and do this thing and start writing music for what would later become Burn Halo.
Starting all over again. Well, it doesn't sound like you've lost any enthusiasm. You don't sound jaded or anything at all. It sounds like you've been kind of revived by it. What caused the breakup of that band? I'm just curious. I always ask that.
You know, it's just like I think the band kind of ran its course. You know, I think with what we did and our musical progression from record to record, all the changes that we made, all the risks that we took musically, you know, I think that we were really struggling to, you know, find out like what kind of band we really were, or not necessarily that. Maybe it was the other way around. You know, the listeners and the audience really trying to figure out what kind of band we really were. I think that was more the case. You know, we had our goals intact and, you know, what we wanted to do and what we wanted to accomplish, but unfortunately, you know, it didn't always, you know, everything didn't always come together, you know, at the same time. And, you know, I think that, you know, with the deal that we had with Epic and, you know, where things kind of ended up, you know, on a radio promotion end and how much money they spent on the band, and we just weren't, you know, I think living up to their expectations, although we were kind of living up to ours to a certain extent. You know, and then they ended up just deciding that they were going to pull the plug on us, and I think that kind of, you know, left everybody, you know, up in arms. They didn't really know, you know, what was going on, and, you know, people didn't want to tour in a van anymore, or go back to a van, I should say, from being in a bus for the last, you know, year and a half, you know, to cut down on costs and save money. And, you know, I think that a couple of guys just wanted their home life and, you know, to be able to write music and maybe play locally, but not really, you know, not really have to deal with the pain and the what ifs of, you know, the music industry on, I think, a professional level, or as far as just, you know, continuing on as a career.
Wow. I've never heard that before. Discrepancies between the band and the record label. It's tough, man. I mean, you feel like the rug's been pulled out from under you.
Yeah, you know, it's hard, man. You got to get everybody on the same page. You know, you got to get them to believe in like the game plan and what the task at hand is, and you know, you got to get everybody, you know, together, and they've all got to have the same goals and know how to accomplish those goals. You know, once they don't, and once you stray from the path, you know, it's really hard to get back on.
Sure. Well, as I said, it sounds like you've really been revived with Burn Halo. And it sounds like, I don't know, you always hate to say attach the label, you know, that maybe that someone's matured. But, I mean, it seems to me like that maybe that's what's happened, because you've spread out a bit stylistically. I mean, you're still rocking super hard when you rock, but, you know, there's some ballads on there, almost a little bit of a country-ish feel on a song or two, and I think your voice sounds really good. I mean, it holds up. You've moved into these other territories, I think, quite well and successfully.
Thanks. You know, I think that I don't know if it's necessarily like a maturity thing, because I feel like, you know, throughout the years of 18 Visions, like I was able to, you know, mature as a songwriter, musician, and, you know, an entertainer. So I think it all just kind of carried over with this, but really, you know, it just kind of stems from the fact that I was able to start fresh and go with my ideas, you know, solely, not have to worry about, you know, what the next guy brought to the table, or you know, giving up, compromising, you know, certain ideas because somebody wasn't into it, or because maybe it wasn't for the better of the song or for what the band was about. I mean, I'm a rock dude. I always have been, you know, whether I was in, you know, a metal hardcore band or not. I've always been a rock dude. I've always been a big fan of it. You know, it's what I grew up listening to. So, you know, I think the people that know me personally and know me really well, you know, or have known me over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, know that, like, this is what I've kind of always been pushing for and what I've always wanted to do, you know. And I think that, you know, being in that band for so long and what we went through and what we dealt with really just kind of gave me the experience, you know, of the industry. The inside and out of the record label and the record industry, and, you know, just, you know, how to be smart, you know, touring and you know, where to cut costs and where you can't cut costs.
And, man, you got to be tough, don't you?
Yeah, you know, you definitely have to.
It's not an easy business.
You definitely have to be, you know, persistent, and, you know, you have to have the work ethic for sure, you know. You definitely can't be lazy about it. You kind of got to go out and make things happen on your own.
So it looks like you got a real cool tour coming up with Hailstorm and Veer Union. Look like it'll be in the Midwest and then on to the East. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, we're stoked. You know, those bands are, you know, I think they've been around longer than us, but, you know, they're both doing the same thing we are right now, which is, you know, putting out new records and, you know, really trying to establish themselves as, you know, an up-and-coming, you know, rock band, regardless of how long they've been around. You know, it's, I think, you know, we're all trying to, you know, make it and break it right now, you know, and it's just great. You know, all three bands are really, you know, climbing the charts at rock radio and, you know, doing some great things. So it's, you know, I think it's going to be a really positive tour.
Excellent. Well, to give people the information on the tour and the dates and where you guys are playing, we want to refer everyone to www.myspace.com/burnhalo. Great site, by the way, and I love your cover art. How'd you come up with that?
Oh, thanks. You know, I just it's weird, man. I had something similar, you know, months back with like the kind of Western, you know, Western art, and I had somebody approach me, you know, through the MySpace page saying, yo, you know, I'm a graphic design guy. I think I could, you know, do a good job, you know, on your page. Just tell me, you know, kind of what you're looking for. Kind of gave him the idea of what I wanted, sent him a couple of graphics of what I liked. You know, he put some things together. You know, I told him where to make the changes, and that's what he did. And, you know, that's what he came up with. So, you know, I was stoked. I think it's, you know, I think it's a striking image, and, you know,
yeah,
it's got a cool vibe to it.
It's very powerful. I love the detail, the filigree on the guns, man. That is, you know, that's
yeah, right.
That's some very cool stuff. I mean, they glow. I mean, you'd swear they were metal, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great site, and it sounds like you really have things together. Super CD, you know, I'm at this point in my life, you know, I don't listen on a daily basis that much, you know, to current anyway, hard rock. You know, I've kind of drifted off in different directions, and I kind of go in cycles and do this and do that. But, man, hearing yours it really does bring me back to, like I said, kind of the – you know, the riff rocking, the fun, but the ballsiness, you know, and the real passion of LA metal, you know, slightly modified. And metal means different things to different people. I think of it more as just like real hard rock, you know, taking hard rock to its extreme. There's some sort of barrier there where metal's different, and it sounds like your first band, you know, definitely was more on the metal side. But this is just like really hard rock, and I'm loving it, man. I really like the CD, and definitely encourage everyone out there to check it out. It's Burn Halo, self-titled. It's been out a few months now, and it is great stuff. All right, one last question, then we got to shift over to the other half of the show. I'm sorry we didn't have too much time, but man, I talked about you.
Yeah, no, you know what? I've been having major issues with my cell phone the last 2 weeks. It basically, if I don't have it, you know, completely plugged in 24/7, it'll die after 5 minutes of being off the charger. So I'm working on getting a new battery here in a couple of days. So I've got one coming to my house. So I hope that is the I hope that's the problem solver.
Well, it's fine. We just kind of front-loaded, you know, we played the songs, I gave the background and all that. So, I mean, it turned out just fine. I'm glad you were able to get in, you know, we were able to chat. But now, I got to know, what about the tattoos, man? As far as I could tell, you are a maximally tattooed individual.
Yeah, you know, I guess I started making the mistakes when I was 15, you know? So... you know, one thing led to another. I've got a bunch of junk on myself. You know, some of the stuff that I've gotten, you know, in the last couple of years has a lot more depth, a lot more meaning behind it. You know, a lot of the stuff I got, you know, when I was younger, it doesn't, you know, it was just kind of spur of the moment. Maybe a bad decision here and there, you know, but.
No, that's never happened.
Yeah, what can you do, you know? You're young and 15 and you're able to get tattooed.
You know what I think? I keep thinking with this current era, you know, where so many people, including women, you know, have tattoos and so many tattoos. It, you know, we're watching the NBA playoffs. Man, what, two-thirds of the players have many tattoos. It seems like, or at least half anyway. And it just keeps. I keep thinking there has got to be a huge market. If someone could come up with a, you know, one that actually works, doesn't leave scars, and isn't ridiculously painful, tattoo removal. I mean, does that exist yet? I haven't heard that it does.
I don't think so, but I'll definitely be on the lookout for it. Hey, they can test it out on me if they want.
That is so funny. It's so funny to hear you being that honest, you know, because a lot of people just. They may feel the way you do, you know, but they're not willing to own up to it. So I.
I'll tell you how it is. I'm a pretty straight shooter, so.
Well, that is clear. That is clear.
I have no problem telling you that I've made some mistakes.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. Hey, good luck on the tour. Good luck with the CD. Really, really, you know, wish you the best. And sounds like you're someone who's been through a lot and a lot of experience, and yet you're still. You know, passionate and love to do what you do, and hey, that's what counts, man. Really, really hope you find the widest possible audience and things go as well as possible for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Again, I do apologize for my tardiness.
No problem. Much better late. There's not even there's no comparison between better late, you know, and never. You know, you were here. We got to talk. We covered all the main stuff. I got to play the music before that and set it up. So no problem at all. No problem at all. So good luck with the tour and hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Right on. Thank you again.
All right. Thanks, James.
All right. Take
care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right. That was James Hart of Burn Halo, better late than never, as we heard. And, you know, cell phones, man, it's one more reason not to only have a cell phone. My two older kids have not had a landline for years now, and to me it always feels so vulnerable. I just can't imagine that yet. All right, well, let's move on. We talked briefly with Josh about halfway through the Burn Halo segment. Are you still around, Josh?
I am still here, Eric.
That is so rocking maximally. And are Lisa and Philip now with us?
I'm here.
And yes, I am.
Excellent. Lisa
Hail
McKay.
Out, the gang's all here.
Oh, it's beyond exciting. It is beyond exciting. Well, as we said earlier.
I knew that Josh would hang around for a chance to talk more.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, he didn't really talk earlier. He just he was in the right place at the wrong time.
Philip has forgotten himself. He knows that Eric is still hosting the first half of this segment.
Yes, the words and the edgewise. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this segment certainly harkened back to some of the other interviews that we've done on Blog Talk Radio over the last year and a half now, or it is a year and a half.
Started.
I mean, you know, as often as not, it seemed like, especially the big name people, you know, they don't call at the right time, they call the wrong number, got to put myself on hold and go track them down. Fortunately, this time I had the publicist sort of going back and forth on email, but she didn't know what was going on either. So it turned out to be a cell phone issue, which is not unusual. That's often what we hear. But yeah, we want to talk to Josh. So we have Philip Nguyen, who is our chief geek and has been the architect of the vast remodeling, retooling of Blog Critics over the last month or so, and still ongoing, interrupted by the server move, which now does seem to be straightening itself out to more or less. I did hit a monster a few times today. I had not hit a monster in a couple days. Today I hit a couple. I have to do the Technorati promos for their site on Tuesday, so I'm over there poking around, seeing what I'm going to promote, and damn it, if I didn't hit the monster. But it didn't last too long. So,
we had some about 15 minutes ago, but that was actually good news. It was part of pushing out a couple new features I'll be emailing about soon.
All right, excellent. Well, we are focusing on Josh Hathaway, who does a number of things and is vastly
important. And some of them right.
Vastly important to Blog Critics. He was our original BC Radio podcast thingy prior to Blog Talk Radio host, and had to deal with, man, all of the tech issues of doing it by hand and editing by hand and gathering interviews on tape or in some recorded form, and then having to slop that all together. That was a lot of effort. I can absolutely know, feel, and commiserate having done some audio editing myself. And so, you know, that was amazing stuff. And Josh has also been writing for us now for years and years and years, doing an excellent job. He is a music editor. I guess now he's a senior music editor, according to what Lisa said, and you run your own site, which is also music oriented. And now, have you been taking a? Did you take a break from that? Just a pause there.
Yeah, I took a brief hiatus. It was somewhat unintentional that it happened. I guess really when it happened is as we were going through the Blog Critics site design, there was a need for some of our most experienced editors to kind of have that sort of all hands on deck mentality, and so I found myself trying to be available for that, and also due to some of the hiccups and frustration, we saw a very, very brief changing of the submission pattern, so I also found myself trying to write a little bit more specifically for Blog Critics, and it was an unintentional hiatus, but I think it will proved to be good. I was starting to feel a little bit stale anyway, and I'm now getting to the place where I'm starting to miss what I had been doing. So I think all will be good, and it's also a sign, too, that Blog Critics is starting to get we're seeing fewer of the Technorati monsters and, you know, people who thought that we should completely overhaul the site and do a massive server relocation simultaneously may have been shot or had their bodies buried in some, you know, hellhole of a bunker or something like that. And so trying to clear some things off the plate to get back to that and achieve balance and chi all over again.
Well put. All right. Well, as we do in this portion of the show, I try to suppress my logorrhea, and why don't we turn things over to Lisa?
Okay. we're gonna try not to talk about Springsteen because we could probably just do the next 20 minutes on that. But I actually had wanted to focus in a little bit on. Josh is turning into kind of a Renaissance man here. Those of us who follow Josh's Twitter feed know that he is the proud recent owner of an Amazon Kindle. And that seems to have also ignited a spark in Josh to write some book reviews. Now, you've had, like, what, two published in the past couple of weeks, Josh?
I think we're now up to three. I just had another one go up today.
So let me ask you, because we talk about, and Philip and I have probably had this conversation a couple of times too. We talk about Kindles a lot at our house because we're both huge readers, and we literally don't have any more room in the house for books, and yet we keep buying them. So, yeah.
When you run out of room, the key is to build more rooms.
Yeah, there's not a room that doesn't have, you know, bookcases, and there are no horizontal surfaces free of books. So tell people who really love the smell and feel and heft of an actual paper book how you like your Kindle and what sort of inspired you to get one.
Well, what inspired me to get one is, you know, one of the things where, you know, some of these other gadgets, you can go into any department store, you can play with them, pick them up, fiddle with them. The Kindle was being sold exclusively through Amazon. So part of what inspired it is that a coworker of mine bought one because I'd see the advertisement when I shop at Amazon.com, proud sponsor of Blog Critics, selling the soap here, guys. I would see them on there, but I didn't have any concept of really how they looked and felt and worked. And so getting to play with the coworkers was one of the things that led me to it. And then it was ultimately a very impulsive decision and not surprisingly a contrarian decision because for those of you who have, you know, wandered over to my Confessions of a Fanboy site, when it comes to the digital versus the tangible, I've had all sorts of arguments and temper tantrums about the love-hate relationship I have with digital music. I have an iPod and an iPhone, and I love the digital portability, but I'm still passionately in love with the physical object that is the compact disc with music on it. So it's so funny that I would love the Kindle as much as I do, for people who still have the romantic notion of, you know, the printed word on an actual page that's been with us for these hundreds of years, you're not going to hear any mockery from me. I understand it, and I think one of the things I've seen as I've started using the Kindle too is that there are still some types of books or some books that will operate better that way, or I certainly understand that. But I've actually found some aspects of reading more enjoyable with the Kindle than I do with the traditional book, and nobody's more surprised by that than me.
Well, that's interesting. What part of the experience do you find better? Because I'm actually surprised. I could sort of think of, like, a couple of occasions. Like, I'm thinking if you have to commute to work, for example, on a crowded bus or a subway or a train, I can certainly see where having a Kindle would be a huge advantage to lugging a book around with you.
Well, one of the parts of the experience that has actually been better for me, aside from, you know, the ease of portability, it's actually very, it's tiny, yet it feels substantial enough in your arms, like you're not going to break it every time you press a button. But I've had a lot of tendonitis problems in my wrist, and the Kindle being a much smaller to hold than, say, your standard paperback, or, you know, if you're holding a paperback in your hand, you know, you've usually got your thumb sort of there in the binding, a couple of fingers, or maybe all four of your fingers in back of it as you hold it out there in front of you at whatever distance. And I tend to, when I start reading a book, I rarely will read a page or two. It's usually, I'm committed, so I'm going to be here for a while. And I would find that, you know, holding the paperback or even a hardback where it can be heavier and less forgiving would actually hurt my hand. You know, most people, they think, you know, you've been on the computer too long, which that's also part of my day job. But I found that holding the Kindle, it's very light. You can adjust the type size so you can hold the device as close or as far from you as your eyes need. And I just found it very comfortable to my hands, which is sort of an underappreciated part of the whole reading experience. And so that's actually been something that I've been pleasantly surprised about.
Huh. Very cool. Now, how many books do you have on it now?
Right now, I've got, I believe, 14 books on it. It comes with the new Oxford American English Dictionary. I can actually tell you, I've got my Kindle here in my backpack that I take with me. One of the cool things, too, is I don't always leave work for lunch, but there have been a couple of days I've actually taken my Kindle out to the car and just read in my car to get out of the office for a little while. But when you buy the Kindle, it comes with the most recent edition of the new Oxford American Dictionary, and I've since bought and it also comes with the Kindle User's Guide, and I've now bought, I guess, 12 books or so, and I have finished 4 of them. I've got reviews written for 3, and I'm working on a 4th, and I'm now putting aside my nonfiction fix and finally reading a novel right now.
Cool. So do you find yourself reading more?
You know, I have, and I think part of it is the Kindle is atrociously expensive. I'm still a little bit, mortified that I actually impulsively spent that much money. But now that I've got it, I dearly love it, and
so
am
I, Josh.
Myself reading more.
Now, how many?
I was saying I'm also mortified that you spent that much on an impulse.
Yeah.
as I contemplate whether or not to buy an $800 television this weekend.
I understand. It was shocking to me, but now that I've got it, I have been reading more, and I think it's one because I tend to go in spurts where I will read heavily and voraciously for a period of weeks or months, and then I'll sometimes go months where I don't pick up anything. And I also think it's in part to justify in my own mind, at least in some measure, how much I just spent on the device. But it's really cool.
Is the screen easier on your eyes than, say, a laptop screen?
It is. The screen on a Kindle is not backlit. So if you're reading in a low-light environment, you'll still need some sort of external light. And it's surprising how closely the words on the screen on the Kindle resemble actual words on a page. It's not very much like staring at a computer monitor or a laptop monitor at all. It's a very different visual experience, and I'm not technical or you know, visually oriented enough to explain all of that, but there's a process, they call it e-ink, that is what the Kindle is using. And I was very surprised. No, it's not nearly as fatiguing as staring at, you know, any of the other electronic gadgets that inhabit our life for hours on end.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that sort of worried me about the idea, mostly because I, like you, sit in front of a computer terminal at work all day, and then I'm generally on my laptop for hours on end when I get home. And I actually find that reading a book is almost sort of restful to my eyes because it's not kind of reflecting back at me while I'm looking at it. So how many books can you actually fit on that thing? How big is the disk?
They claim, now I think that the actual memory module in my particular model, which is the second generation, and they're about to come out with a larger version this summer, mine has, I believe, 2 gigs, which doesn't sound like a lot until they tell you that they approximate that you can get over 1,000 books on this 2-gig second-generation module.
Well, there's your summer reading right there.
Absolutely, and I don't even have to go to some uncomfortable, crowded beach. We're not beach people in my house, but yes, I've undertaken a summer reading program and really, really loving it.
Not beach people.
No, sir. No, sir. People keep throwing pointed sticks at me, and there are all sorts of Captain Ahab references, and it's just, you know, it makes me feel bad about myself.
Oh, now.
No one believes
you know,
that.
They Free Willy jokes, all sorts of things.
Oh yeah.
I don't dig the beach. I like air conditioning. Everything I like to do can be done indoors. I like to write. I like to read. I like to listen to music. I like to watch movies. I like to watch sports. Now, those, if you want to see those in person, you have to go outdoors. But generally speaking, most of my great interests happen indoors with air conditioning the way God intended.
Do you like to swim?
No. My parents wasted more money on swimming lessons as a child than on probably anything else. I sink like a rock.
Wow. All righty then. Well, we won't argue about that.
If the Titanic goes down, I'm going with it. I'll try and swim, but I'll get about 2.5 feet, and then that's pretty much going to be it.
Not a glider,
You know, mentioning the beach actually brings up one of my biggest concerns about a Kindle. Lisa mentioned earlier it's probably better to take Kindle on a crowded bus and all that kind of stuff. I kind of think about it the opposite way. I mean, if I'm going to go to the beach and read something, or if I'm going to go poolside and read something, you know, if water splashes on my paperback, I'm out $6-7. Water splashes on my Kindle. How much was it that you paid again, Josh?
$369.
Yeah, it's not so much something I want to do near any source of water.
My wife is more comfortable around water than I am, and she's been known to take a paperback into the bathtub with her and has been known to see if the paperback wanted to swim. That's one of the reasons that she, despite the fact that she is a more voracious reader than I am, that's one of the reasons she said, I don't want one. She said, we both know that thing's going for a swim.
Hey, I have a question. Oh, first of all, did you just see Indians owner Larry Dolan had a heart attack? I'm looking at Twitter right now, just seeing that. Did you see that?
Oh, goodness. No, I hadn't seen that. He apparently has watched his team play this year.
Apparently.
Wow, I hope that he is.
Maybe this is a residual effect from the 11-10 comeback win. He was so startled that his poor cardiac.
Do they have any updates on his condition, Eric?
No, this is like just I'm just seeing that headline coming through from Cleveland.com just as we speak.
Wow.
I want to ask you one other thing before we run out of time.
Sure.
In one of your other guises, I think it was under your Confessions of a Fanboy Twitter feed, you mentioned that you just don't get Jazz. First of all, I wanted to hear what are Phillips and Lisa's takes on Jazz, because I know I've heard Lisa talk about it, but I don't remember if I've heard Phillips say much. And then
this is me in stunned silence that Josh doesn't get Jazz.
Well, he said get, you know, obviously he's spending some time listening to it. So it's not like he's avoiding it, but get, you know, quote unquote. I mean, I've always felt that I had a better understanding and appreciation of, you know, in the broadest sense, pop rock, meaning kind of everything other than, say, classical and jazz, than I do of jazz, and certainly than I do of classical, even though I have a fair amount of training in it. But I've always understood or had a better appreciation or a more intuitive grasp of it. But as I've gotten older, I do put a fair amount of time and effort into listening and trying to figure out, you know, what I like better and worse and what really works for me and then just try to come to terms with that. You know, why is it that I like this one versus that one or this style versus that style? You know, like, Josh, as you were saying in a different context, you were talking about country and you were saying how much you don't like pop country, you know, the typical Nashville radio stuff, and for the most part, I don't either, although I may have slightly less dislike than you do, or at least, but I do love, you know, roots music in general, and I like a lot of bluegrass, I like certainly blues, I like, you know, southern soul, I like a fair amount of folk music, you know, Americana, which is sort of an umbrella, but, you know, I agree about that. So trying to make a parallel to that as far as, you know, jazz goes, you know, like I don't like the smooth jazz, what is called smooth jazz, and you would hear on a smooth jazz station. That to me just sounds like typically it's just kind of like bad R&B, bad.
So it's not, yeah, that's not really jazz.
Bad funk, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I love, you know, gentle jazz. There's a, you know, cocktail jazz, evening jazz. I love, you know, I love Miles Davis, blue period. I love, you know, the lighter side. I love a lot of, you know, pianists who are approaching things gently, and I love a lot of ambient music of, you know, a certain amount of jazz, acid jazz and whatnot gets tossed into there. So it's kind of like I know what I like, but it's not always easy to define it or to explain it to people. You know it when you hear it. So I was – that all of this just was sort of brought up when I saw your comment about getting jazz. So having – sent things all over the place. I will toss it over to you to try to respond to all 17 of those questions.
Well, that's great. I think I can clarify, and actually the way you ended sets me up. When I say I don't get jazz, it doesn't. I don't say that, and this is one of the challenges of Twitter and 140 characters in context. It doesn't mean that I dislike jazz. Really what it means is that I have found jazz intimidating and more so jazz fans intimidating because, you know, just like Eric, when you were talking to James earlier for the brief duration we had him, you know, there are certain segments of music where the fans of that particular music can be very brutal and abusive in one form or another. If you're listening to the wrong kind of rock, it can, you know, you show up at a Pantera concert wearing a Winger t-shirt, and I do believe you will get your ass kicked, you know, or, you know.
As well you should.
Yeah, as well you should, you know, and you know, this is really the will of God, or, you know, although going to a Pantera, reconciling that, we'll leave that alone. Anyway, you know, or you some people who are serious students of jazz, and you walk in with a Kenny G CD, you'll get laughed out of the room. Maybe they won't be as physically intimidating, or, you know, within the punk rock scene. What happened?
I don't know. Mark Celeste's kind of scary.
Well, Mark's scary in a whole host of other areas and whatnot. But a lot of what it is for me is, you know, for someone who loves music as much as I do, to have as little musical ability, I think, is one of God's cruel ironies. Really, all I can play is an iPod. And so jazz can be very cerebral. Jazz can be very, it can be very distant and impenetrable, at least with what little exposure I had. And so a lot of what it was is I never really knew where to start to find what niche I may like or not like. And the funniest thing, and it's, you know, sort of Blog Critics features into this prominently, part of the way that I started to discover just a little bit of jazz is there's a guy, his name's Barrett Martin, and if you've been over to Fanboy or Blog Critics, I've written about him a lot. He was a drummer for a Seattle rock band in the 90s called Screaming Trees. And this is a fascinating guy who is now ordained in as a Zen Buddhist. He's got his lay ordination. He has traveled to Cuba, to Africa, all over the world to study world music and jazz and all of its different forms. And it's in listening to some of his music, which I was interested in because of his connection to Screaming Trees, which was a band I really loved, that I started to hear more jazz and world percussion, and it kind of opened my eyes and my ears to it. But I still feel very much like I'm an infant, just a boy trying to become a man in the world of jazz, still really crawling, not even standing up. And so I've started to listen to some of the Miles Davis Blue period. I think Kind of Blue is an unspeakably beautiful record, and kind of tried to find my way through it. So I don't dismiss jazz. I just stand somewhat slack-jawed and in awe of it.
Well, that was a very honest and interesting response. Real quickly, because we're at 7:02, and so we're no longer on live. I mean, what I would say, what my suggestions are, what seems to work, what worked for me kind of when I was at that phase, because I very much was at that phase and absolutely did feel, felt intimidation, and can still too if I'm really trying to do it. But I think a really great place to start is just do, you know, which I think you already do a lot of, do a little bit of reading, you know, and just poke around. There's so much stuff online. There's always books, of course. But, you know, there's kind of really a central canon, you know what I mean, that's pretty much universally accepted as these really are the standards. You can go through the Library of Congress list, you know, pick out the jazz from there. You can do kind of a history of jazz thing. I find the farther back in time you go, the less intimidating it is, but that may just be a distance in time, because it sure is not as though the playing wasn't amazing. You know, I mean, you go back to the 20s and hear Louis Armstrong, it's spectacular playing. But anyway, and just kind of listen to jazz's greatest hits, you know, kind of like you would enter into any field, and you can reduce it, you know. I mean, people will tell you you can't, you know, or that's a reductionist approach. But I think that that's a good door, because now you're hearing what is perceived to be generally accepted to be the best. And so why is that so? So if you're listening to it, you're thinking, why is this? You know, so how does this relate to these other ones that are, you know, in theory the best? And you know, and then there's lots of inroads into jazz from stuff that you're already very much well versed in and very interested in. You know, there's certainly a very strong blues jazz connection. There's there's a rock jazz connection, certainly. There's some great stuff from the later 60s and into the 70s fusion wise, you know, Mahavishnu Orchestra and Herbie Hancock and whatnot, Miles Davis himself for that matter. You know, with the rock jazz connection, and I think that's a great place to start. The other thing I want to say about jazz is it is fundamentally a different way of thinking about music, in that kind of all the rest of popular music, all the other genres were, you know, everything other than classical and jazz, basically, it is basically song-oriented, song-structured, beginning, middle, end. And there's a melody there, and you're following a line, and the song is kind of ultimately the irreducible point. With jazz, the song is the leaping off point. See, so the point is not to convey that song. The point is to use that song as a basis then for improvisation. So ultimately that's what it's all about. It's improvisation. What are the greatest, you know, that's what's the greatest, quote unquote, in the history of jazz, are the greatest improvisations, those who were best at it and their single greatest performances. And, you know, when you approach it from that standpoint, then it starts to make a lot more sense, because you're not looking so much for song structure. You're looking for, okay, so what are they doing with that basic melody? And often, you know, it just cracks me up when you hear, you know, what comes out of a jazz musician that's supposed to be some song you think you know well. Because, man, you may hear one little snippet of it, you know, at the beginning and the end, that you recognize, and all the rest is improvised. But if you start thinking of it that way and start to appreciate what goes into that level of sophistication, the speed, the dexterity, the knowledge, all of those things, and then just the musicality of creating those improvisations based on often, you know, very simple, familiar stuff, familiar melodies, familiar tunes, then I think that's a pretty good jumping off point as well. So if you combine those things, kind of approach it from a jazz's greatest hit standpoint, check it out, see what you like, see what is meaningful to you, see what strikes a chord, no pun intended, and then while you're doing that, keep in mind it's not the songs, it's the improvisation. I think that goes a long way, because you're obviously very passionate, interested, knowledgeable about music. So, you know, I think it's really just a matter of putting a little time and effort into it, and I think you'll find stuff you really, really do like a lot, and it'll come to be some of your favorite music over time.
Well, that's kind of how I did it with the blues. I kind of started with rock and worked my way back, and just read, bringing it all back home to the Kindle and Blog Critics. Ted Gioia is a great writer that we have writing at Blog Critics, and he wrote a terrific Delta Blues, Mississippi Delta Blues history book called Delta Blues, and it's actually one of the featured reviews over at our Blog Critics book section. I wrote a review of it, downloaded it for my Kindle, and he's also written a book called The History of Jazz, which is on my to read this summer list. And so I plan on using one of our fine blog critics and also published authors as a bit of a guide through a musical genre that to this point I've been a little bit distant with. I dug right in there with the blues and have found some stuff that I just really love, and reading his book, I learned more about stuff that I already like, and also learned about some artists that I didn't know about, and you know, I've added that to my go check out list at Amazon or iTunes or what have you. So thank you Master Kenobi for the further guidance with my jazz exploration, and It's something I'll be writing about for Blog Critics and over at Fanboy as I return from my hiatus.
Super. Excellent. Cool stuff. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to get into things. It's fun to, you know, like I said, to this day, I don't feel that I have a familiarity, you know, with jazz or classical that I do with kind of everything else, you know, and probably for a lot of the same reasons that you said, Josh, you know, I'm coming from a pop rock kind of, you know, top 40 back to my early childhood, you know, which at that time, top 40 really was eclectic, you know, I'm talking mid 60s now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was kind of everything but jazz at that point, and jazz and classical. And, you know, so, I mean, I've never arrived at that level because I'm not that kind of musician either. I mean, to the extent that I am a musician, it's very song-based. It's very kind of simple stuff. It's simple chords. It's, you know, it's just playing. And, you know, to play jazz, you really, really, really do have to know what you're doing. And you have to have some theory, and you have to, you know how to get from one place to the next in a smooth manner, and ultimately in a inventive and you know, personal manner. So I'm certainly nowhere near any of that, and it, you know, and my ear has never developed in that way. You know, to the extent that it has. You know, I feel like in many areas of popular music, I would consider myself a, you know, quote-unquote expert. And I would trust my ear anyway, if not my knowledge. I would trust my ear against anyone's. But jazz, you know, I feel like a beginner still, too, and maybe always will. But there's so much there that even just feeling like a beginner, there's hundreds and hundreds of jazz records that I really, really like and you know, think about them and can kind of conceptualize what they sound like in my mind. And so certainly I have no doubt you can arrive at that point.
I've got that with a few of the records I've got, the Barrett Martin, the Dace Carter, and I've got, you know, like I said, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, has become a regular staple of my listening here lately. So, yeah, you know, it's cool. I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I set off to trace some of the blues roots, and have found some stuff that is just phenomenal and I love, and I think the same thing will happen with jazz. And you know, that's the fun of exploration, because right now it's not that good music isn't being made now. Of course it is, but, you know, there's also a lot of stuff that you kind of have to wade through, and jazz is sort of its own universe apart, like you were saying. You know, jazz and classical kind of exist, you know, way over on the other side from, you know, everything else, and so it's kind of cool to go explore and just set everything else apart and let it all shake out, you know, let Green Day make their records or whoever, and just kind of go swim in some different waters, which, you know, I can't really swim, but musically I can swim.
All right, well, we're almost up to 7:15, so let's fill up.
Appreciate the invite.
Oh, yes. Philip and Lisa, any last thoughts?
I thought that your advice about how to get into jazz or any genre of music is really good, and it's an approach I sometimes use when I'm trying to get into something I'm not very familiar with. I like that.
Thank you.
Well, I'm still not convinced on the Kindle, but I am going to try out the Kindle iPhone app, Josh. I know I'm missing most. I'm missing most of the. Most of the advantages you listed of the Kindle are not present in the iPhone app, of course, in that it's a backlit screen and so on. But I also already own one of those.
Yeah, and it won't cost you. You have, you know, the one advantage that comes with the iPhone app is something to the tune of $369 that you will have that I do not.
On the other hand, and imagine this probably should be our last note. Sure, that's expensive. You know, I mean, it's the cost of an expensive phone, shall we say, multi-purpose expensive phone. But you then save on books from then on.
You do, and if you read enough, at some point it can become somewhat cost-effective. And if you've got the situation that that the McKays do, where they have no more space to place a book. If you read so much that you're running out of room, being able to get the books cheaper, you can you can somewhat take the dent out of the upfront cost over time. And apparently that's what I'm trying to do. I'm reading in volume. I'm reading in bulk. I'm like Costco right now.
All right. Well, thanks to you all, and really hope to see everyone here at 6 o'clock Eastern next Wednesday. We'll have another great show. Until then, have a great week, everybody.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.